Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Weekly Spotlight. My name is John Mayo, and I'll be your host.
And I'm Bob Retall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting three comics that came out in shops last week, but that John and I got from DCBS this week. One from DC, one from Marvel, and one from some other publisher. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
The comics we'll be discussing in this episode originally came out on July 2nd, 2008. And, man, I thought last week was a big week. This week wasn't quite as big, but right on the heels of that, damn, it was too many comics again.
I'm way behind.
I've got about half of this week still to read.
I've been very busy. I've been doing stuff, and I've been working, and I'm going to be out of town all next week. And I'm leaving tomorrow, actually, on Sunday, and then I'm going to be back for a couple of days, and then we've got San Diego Con, so I'm going to get more and more behind. I think I'm going to be catching up after the con, really.
Oh, I always get behind this time of year, because I'll get the stuff that arrives on Monday when this episode gets released. You know, I may or may not get some of that read before leaving for con. Obviously, I'll get the three or four we're going to talk about. But then the shipment I would get the Monday before con, which, you know, was the Wednesday before when it came out, comes while I'm out of town, as does the next shipment. So by the time I get back, I've got 2 weeks piled up. Hopefully they won't be as big as this week and last week. But then, you know, just catching up with things at work, you know, stuff around the house, etc. You know, I'm usually, you know, 2-3 weeks behind guaranteed coming out of con, and that can take just a bit to read through.
Yeah.
And that's if I start current, you know, which at this point, we'll see how much of well, like I said, I got half this week's shipment left to read, and then whatever comes Monday. So, and this week, I got 50 comics, 2 trades, and a magazine.
Yeah, and I got 46 comics, 3 trades, and a magazine.
And again, this is on top of each of us getting 50-something, you know, comics last week.
Yeah, I used to say, oh, yeah, we get about 120 or 130 comics a month. But when you get 100 comics in 2 weeks, it's
yeah.
Like, am I going to get like 10 comics a week for a couple of weeks? Or am I going to get like 160 comics this month or something? It just seems crazy.
Yeah. Well, like we did last week when we had over 50, we went through a quick rundown of what all we got. I think because we're right about at that point, and again, since it's the week after such a big week, people have got to be wondering, again, how on earth did we manage this? I figured it'd be fun, again, to do a quick rundown, but don't worry, people, this is not going to be a regular feature of the show. So, again, I broke it into 3 categories, stuff that we both got, stuff that just you got, and stuff that just I got. So, going through the things that both of us got, All New Atom number 25, Amazing Spider-Man 564, Astonishing X-Men 25, Astounding Wolfman 7, Avengers Invaders 3, Batman 678, Billy Batson and the Magic of Shazam number 1, Blue Beetle 28, The Boys 20, Brit 7, Buffy the Vampire Slayer 16, Cable 5, Dynamo 5 number 14, Fables 74, FX 5, House of Mystery number 3, Justice for Hire number 4, Legion of Superheroes number 43, Manhunter 32, New Dynamics 4, Nightwing 146, Noble Causes 35, Patsy Walker Hellcat number 1, Punisher War Journal 21, Rand Thanagar Holy War number 3, Rogue Angel Teller of Tall Tales number 5, Secret Invasion Frontline number 1, Squadron Supreme Volume 2 number 1, Star Trek Assignment Earth number 3, Star Trek Mirror Images number 1, Star Trek New Frontier number 4, Station number 1, Supergirl 31, Sword 9, Terry Moore's Echo number 4, Trinity 5, Walking Dead number 50, and War That Time Forgot number 3.
Yep, and then I got Dummy's Guide to Danger, Lost at Sea number 3, Northlanders 7, Tor number 3, Vinyl Underground number 10, Hellboy the Crooked Man number 1, Marvel Adventures Spider-Man number 41, Jonah Hex 33, Storming Paradise number 1, and then in trades I got Path of the Assassin volume 12, Usagi Yojimbo volume 22, and a Water Baby, which is a Minx trade. by Ross Campbell.
And then the stuff that I got that you did not was American Dream number 5, Angel After the Fall number 10.
Just making notes here, is like Angel After the Fall I stopped getting as of issue 9.
Yeah, I can understand that. I'm curious how 10 is. It's one of the ones I haven't read yet. DC Special Raven number 5, which also I think is one you dropped.
Yeah, I dropped that after the first issue.
Doctor Who number 5, G.I. Joe America's Elite 36, Infinity Inc. 11, which again...
I dropped that at the first issue, yep.
Good choice. I cannot fault you for that. Joker's Asylum, The Joker number 1, which I think you skipped.
Yes, I will get that out of 50-cent bins at some point.
Again, probably not a bad choice. Myth Told Tales number 1, Myth Congeniality.
Now that's one that I just somehow missed, and I'm going to have to look for that one at the shop.
I haven't read that one yet, but I know the artist who did it, and I was surprised because I hadn't realized he was doing it. It's Phil Moy.
Yeah, I like those Robert Lynn Asprin adaptions. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to reading that. It should be fun. And then I also got Savage Dragon 136, Secret Invasion number 1, The Director's Cut, Star Trek Year 4, Enterprise Experiment number 3, and Stephen Colbert's Tech Jansen number 2.
I lost interest in during the year or more wait since the issue 1 came out that was not that impressive.
And then I got 2 trades on this list of Invaders Classic Volume 2 and Showcase Presents Batman Volume 3. So obviously both of us have a fairly huge stack of comics to read, and both of us got right around that 50 comics mark. And I know I've started getting a lot more titles. I mean, I started picking up the Star Trek stuff, and there were 4 of those this week. It's like, come on, guys at IDW, you got enough titles, do one a week. Space these things out. I think, you know, it'll do better. I mean, I'm always hearing retailers like Brian Hibbs and others saying that when they get a bunch of stuff piled up on one week, it just hurts all the sales of the stuff. You know, people only have so much they're going to spend every week. So there was that. I'm trying to think if there was something else that kind of bunched up this week. It was the main thing. But yeah, I've started getting the Star Trek stuff. I've started getting Doctor Who. What else have I added to my list that's starting to, you know... Well, and, you know, a while back I added all the Wildstorm stuff. I still haven't read it because I haven't had time to plow through and catch up on all that, but that's getting near the top of my list of things to read after the new weekly stuff.
Yeah, it's just, you know, they're pumping them out right now. They're all different, although, yeah, I guess 2 consecutive weeks there were none of the same books came out, I mean, other than Trinity, which is weekly.
Yeah.
The last Angel came out relatively recently, as like maybe 2 weeks ago.
That one, I think they've done...
Number 9.
I think they've done 3 issues in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's another one where, you know, space that out over time. They should have had at least, you know, a week or two between each one. That the pacing on that's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I think that they had the regular continuity issues piled up just so they could do those sort of interstitial, you know, kind of backup stories as 3 issues of the regular series. They just had like a big pile of stuff backed up, which, you know, why? Oh, well, you know.
I mean, maybe what they should have done was keep the book monthly, take those 3 issues, do them as a mini series or a one-shot or something in between, you know, 2 of the issues or something. But having that you know, 3-issue gap, which took, what, 2-3 months or whatever to do, and then suddenly flooding out these other issues, it really broke the momentum of that story for me big time.
Mm-hmm.
First too slow, now too quick almost.
Right.
So, you want to get into the first comic of the week?
Sure. Billy Batson and the Magic of Shazam, number 1 by Mike Kunkel, out of the Johnny DC line.
And, of course, Mike Kunkel is from Hero Bear and the Kid fame. That was a series I really enjoyed when it came out and wish he had done more of. And I had mixed feelings on this issue. I mean, it's a Johnny DC, so I knew going in it was going to be a kid's book. I would have preferred if it was an all-ages book. And to me, the difference is an all-ages book is something that's kind of equally enjoyable regardless of age, whereas a kid's book, I don't want to say is written down, but certainly is skewed down in various ways towards a younger reader, almost at the expense of older readers. And in this issue, where that really came out for me was the Monster Society code and how there were, you know, a couple of dialogue balloons and stuff where you had to decode what they're saying. And I'm old, I'm lazy, I didn't do that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had a similar thought there, and even for younger kids, I won't say little kids, but I mean even for I think the target age, which is maybe, you know, in the 8 to 12 range, I'm guessing, there were 3 pages that had 7 word balloons total. And then on the last page of the story, there was an extensive amount of text, over 100 words on that page alone, to be decoded. And I'm thinking that even a kid who's in the target audience for this is most of them are not going to sit and decode, you know, 200 to 300 words to be able to read this story. And, you know, most of the people who are going to buy this are going to skip it. Now, I decoded the first word, the first panel that had it. And the first panel says there's a mysterious stranger saying, "Go forth, young Billy, take the magic subway to the Rock of Eternity." And Billy responds, "Are you sure you mean me?" Now, even right there, that's about 20 words just in that panel. It took me, you know, a little bit of time. You know, it's not something that happens instantaneously on the translation. And again, are kids really going to do this? And the secret code is a long-standing tradition in Captain Marvel comics back to, you know, the 40s, I believe, which even then it was used as a – there'd be a shortish secret message at the end of an issue or something, as I recall. Now, maybe somebody who's a hardcore Captain Marvel fan can correct me on that. But I'm pretty sure they didn't have pages and pages of dialogue and captions in the secret code, that it was mostly just an actual secret message that was maybe 15 or 20 words, if even that, that had to be decoded. So this, the overuse of it was a little off-putting. And I enjoyed the story. I love Mike Kunkel's art. But, you know, at the very least, they should have done, with the extensive use of the code, what they did in the back of Blue Beetle 26 with the Spanish, where they had the translation on a text page in the back of the issue. You know, if they would have had, you know, if you don't want to spend an hour deciphering these, you know, 250 words of secret code and want to see what the story is, here's a translation. But, you know, I can see, you know, I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the art. But, you know, if there's going to be a couple of hundred words every issue in secret code, I'm going to drop this book like a hot rock.
Yeah. To me, it came across as kind of putting an activity book sort of a thing in here. I see your point about the historical aspect or whatever, and I agree. If it had been a little thing that was not integral to the story and just kind of a cool Easter egg or whatever, I'd have had no problem with it whatsoever. But it was a barrier to getting into the story, and particularly since it happened right at the beginning, it totally turned me off. And I like the art and the style. I think it fits the book. I was a little surprised that Mary Marvel was kind of the baby sister approach. And again, this is more kids book than I usually am interested in. It's a good, you know, book. Don't get me wrong. It's well written. It's well drawn. It's entertaining. But it's not really, you know, clicking with me at this point. I was very surprised that it ends with essentially, you know, a to-be-continued, well, not essentially, exactly, a to-be-continued thing. I was expecting more of a done-in-one story. So that was, again, you know, a good thing. I'm glad they're not doing, limiting it to what can we cram into the 22 or however many pages they use for this. And they're trying to tell a bigger story. I'll certainly give it a couple of issues. I think I've got at least issues 2 and 3 pre-ordered, and I'm fine with that. I'm curious where they're going. It's got some interesting stuff, but the likelihood of me staying with this beyond that, fairly low. And this may work with its target audience. Again, they're aiming for younger readers. I would think they're going more for maybe the 6 to 9 range than the 8 to 12 that you were saying, Bob, but I'm not really sure.
I could see that. Now, again, I'm looking at this. I'm trying to put it into the mindset of the younger kids, and my kids are older now, so I can't really ask them. But even the little kids, I think that the sheer quantity of secret code is off-putting. And, you know, it's just an activity book aspect is fine when there's like, you know, some of the other books, you know, they've had puzzle pages and, you know, word searches and things like that, which, you know, you mix it up a little bit. But when you, you know, throw 200 or 300 words of secret code translation at a kid, it starts seeming like homework, it would seem to me. You know?
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like it would be fun. After a certain point, it just becomes tedious.
Well, but even aside from the secret code aspect, if you go to like the page with the staple and that story page, there's some pretty long caption boxes. There's a lot of dialogue. There's just a lot of reading in this, more so than I think in a lot of comics. You go to the page prior to the staple, same thing. This is a very wordy book, and there's nothing – I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
And that's I think, the reason why I skewed it more to the 8 to 12, because it's written in a way, you know, there are a lot of words, and they're not – which, to its benefit, they're not dumbed down words. But I think a 6-year-old would have a difficult time making it through this on their own. Now, certainly their parent could read it to them, which would be really good. I'd be really interested to hear any listener out here, because this is certainly something to try if you've got littler kids. You know, pick this up. It's only 2 1/4, and read it with your kid and let us know how the younger kids react to this, because maybe the younger kids are really, really going to like this.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that, because I could see where they would just totally eat it up and love it. I can also see where it's just too much stuff in here, again, with the heavy dialogue quantity and stuff.
Yeah. Now, if a parent is reading that to the child, I can see that could be fun and entertaining. I would really like to understand, and we can, you know, if you send us an email about this, you know, we'll read it on a future episode in particular, because I'd really be interested in how the kid likes the story in general and how the child feels about translating all those words, if they would even be willing to do that or if they would think that that's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to hear that from a kid's view that's like under 10 years of age, you know?
Well, I'd like to know both a kid that read it on their own and one whose parent read it to them, because I think that too would also be a little bit of a different experience. But I would think that, you know, if you were to read this to a child, given how much, you know, dialogue, captions, etc. there is, this would probably take the better part of half an hour, which on the one hand is great because it puts it, you know, on par with like a half hour cartoon or something.
And it's a good value for the money in that respect. I mean, it's not
excellent value. Yeah.
A little short, you know, OK, I've spent 4 minutes on this and I'm done. I think that it is a tremendous value for the money. I'm just curious on, you know, how much time it will take to, you know, get through some of that. Now, as a parent myself, the last thing I would need is to read this to my kid and have, "Dad, translate all that secret text for me so I can understand what the thing is." Yeah. And I'd be sitting there for 2 hours translating all this text.
That's where it becomes homework for the parent. Yeah.
Yeah.
All in all, again, you know, like I said, I had mixed feelings on this. Aspects of it I really enjoyed and really liked. Other parts didn't quite work for me. I see a lot of potential in this. It's something that I can see either doing really well or really poorly, depending, you know, how it clicks with its target's audience. I'm probably not going to follow it long term in terms of reading it, but I am very curious to see how it does and how the market reacts to it.
Next up, we've got Patsy Walker Hellcat number 1. This seemed to be another book where I'm not in the target audience. I tried to look at it from the point of who it would be targeted at. I'm a little eluded. I'm thinking maybe teenage girls are the target audience for this book. I'm basing that merely on the fact that they spent the first 6 or 7 pages with her modeling dresses and, you know, having strange fantasy visions of things that might happen. And lots of clothing, lots of changing clothes, modeling clothes, lots of hair, you know. Just
I don't know who they're aiming this at. And I felt it was a bit of a departure both from what I'd read in Marvel Comics Presents and just kind of the whole initiative thing, you know, in and of itself. I mean, fine, Alaska doesn't have that big of a population. You don't want to put a whole team there, although that's kind of what the 50 States Initiative was about. You're going to put a hero there. Okay, I can buy that, but Hellcat? Why her? Why not somebody who can actually get around that kind of huge geography?
Yeah, someone who can fly and or someone who's got powers that are actually adapted to being in the snow. You know, there are characters like that, you know.
Yeah. It was very puzzling. And then, you know, add to that the fashion model, you know, aspect of the book. It was not at all what I had expected. I'm going to get the whole run. I mean, I've already got most of it pre-ordered. It's not a bad book. I just spent my time reading it wondering what on earth were they thinking and where are they going on with this?
For me, this is one that I only ordered the first issue. So I won't be ordering any subsequent issues of this. If I see the rest of the series in a 50-cent bin somewhere, I'll buy them and check it out. Giving it the benefit of the doubt, it's just, okay, I'm not in the target audience for this book, so I'm not going to judge it too harshly because I'm not who they're shooting at when they're putting this thing together. So I'm not going to hold that against them. The art by David LaFuente, I really like the art. The art was, you know, a nice style.
I like the art, but I didn't think it totally fit this book, or at least let me take that back. I think it fit this book. It didn't fit my expectation of what this book would have been or should have been. You know what I mean?
Yeah. For what the book was, I think the art style, you know, was a relatively good match. What, you know, maybe you would have wanted it to be, again, yeah, that probably not a good fit.
Well, it had been pitched as a, you know, here's a Hellcat solo story featuring her in the initiative, and I was expecting standard superheroic goodness type stuff.
Right, which, again, when they start saying and pitching it as part, you know, of the initiative, one might be led to believe that it would be like one of the other Avengers initiative type of books, which again, as you said, have relatively standard superhero kind of action and things like that, which this book certainly doesn't.
If this had been Hellcat's Alaskan Adventure or some such, I would have gone in with different expectations.
Right.
So this, to me, is something where I don't want to judge the book harshly, but I really do want to judge the marketing of the book harshly, because I think it was completely mismarketed. I went in with the complete wrong expectations, and the book suffered in for me because of that. So this is one that, man, I don't know who I would recommend this to, if anyone. And you know, when you're saying you'll pick it up if you see it in 50 cent bins, it's no, when you see it in 50 cent bins.
Yeah. Well, I certainly do think that someone who really loves maybe Spider-Man, loves Mary Jane or something like that, that's going to be the same target audience.
Yes, because it very much has that art style and feel, and hell, she looks like Mary Jane in places.
The direction I think they're going to be going on Runaways next with the Humberto Ramos art, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, I just can't see how they're going to tell stories similar to the stories they used to tell in that book with that art style, but we'll see. When that one comes out, I think that's going to be a very big departure for that title also. But I think there's a certain demographic that they're shooting for with this, which is good that they're putting out books for that demographic.
I'm not
the best person to review something that's targeted at that demographic, and I'll freely admit that. So I'm not going to hold that against the book. Instead of saying I'm thumbs down on it, I'm more like neutral for it. I don't think it was a terrible story. It wasn't my cup of tea. But again, it's because I don't think I'm the target demographic for it.
Yeah, I will go with neutral, and I will also say that if they had marketed it better and I'd gone in with better expectations that match kind of what it is, I probably would have been happier. and that if, when it's all said and done, I go back and reread it, I'll probably have a bit more of a positive feeling for it. But as it is, I just need a little time to figure out where they're going and kind of adjust my expectations accordingly.
You know, another group that might really love this, or at least enjoy it a lot more, is it is seeming to be that comedy superhero kind of book, sort of like the Giffen DeMatteis Justice League International books. I mean, not as artfully crafted as that by any means, but that kind of a take on superheroes. It's that, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, kind of tongue-in-cheek humor type of combination. So if you really like that, then again, this might be something to check out. Okay, next we have Terry Moore's Echo from Abstract Studios, number 4.
Now, did you read Strangers in Paradise for its whole run, or just a couple issues here and there? Or
I did not read it as it was coming out monthly. I did buy the pocket trades as they were coming out, and I have not finished all of them. I've gotten through the first couple of them, the first two, and the other ones are on my to-read.
I got the 3 issues that Antarctic Press did. I got the first 14 of the Abstract Studios one, and I've got one of the first one of the Image run. But that's really about all I read of Strangers in Paradise. It was fine, it was good, it just wasn't a story that interested me. Whereas Echo, I'm really enjoying. I think this is a lot of fun. It's a good story. It's moving at a nice, comfortable pace, and something I could see going for quite some time, and one that I'm really enjoying.
Yeah. Now, Strangers in Paradise, I mean, the art is very similar, obviously. You know, Terry Moore's doing the art. So I love the art on Strangers in Paradise. And, you know, Strangers in Paradise, I'm liking the story, what I've read of it so far. It is much more of a relationship-focused kind of slice-of-life story. It's not any kind of action in the traditional sense of the word. It's more of a drama, right?
Yeah.
Whereas that's where this book takes that departure. You got the same wonderful Terry Moore art and his sense of storytelling, but now you've got a more action-oriented story. He still has the strong female characters, which he certainly established as one of his strengths with Strangers in Paradise, rather being, you know, really able to do the strong female lead characters. So we have that. And, you know, this story is a much more, I don't want to say standard, but much more traditional action mystery. You know, there's some sci-fi elements in here. There's some what really is the story behind the story. You know, what was being put into making this suit, and why is what's happening to the main character Julie happening to her? What's the backstory of the lady Annie, who was the initial pilot of the beta suit, and all of that. So I'm really enjoying this issue. Is a little slower than the previous 3 issues, I thought. There was a little more background information given, though. We got some flashes of the Annie stuff. We got some, you know, what happened to her. Her boyfriend is showing up, and, you know, things like that. So I'm really liking this series, and I'm in it for the long run. I think that if you haven't checked out Echo yet, you should definitely try it out. If you like, it's not like high action, high adventure, but it's really nicely done storytelling. I'm trying to think of what would be a similar movie or television show to compare it to. Certainly not X-Files, but
No, it's something that's got an ongoing serial narrative, so it's not just episodic type stuff. Equating it to a TV show is really good comparison, because
maybe like the 4400.
Yeah, 4400 would be good, because I mean, this is one where you've got the characters that kind of pull you through it. With the 4400, they go and explore other characters too, more so initially than later. But they've got an ongoing story they're building, as they do here. Part of what I'm liking about this is each issue is very much a chapter in the story, but not in a disconnected manner like some comics tend to be. It's one where I feel that I get a satisfying story chunk. They progress the story. They grow the characters a bit. There's, you know, somewhere that it's going, yet not one where I'm thinking, okay, it's clearly going here. I'm bored. Let's move on. It's one that I'm really enjoying the ride on this, and it's very comfortably paced. It's not decompressed where I'm thinking, okay, let's get to the next plot point. Yet it's also not slam-bang action where I feel too much is happening in one issue. This is one that I can easily see going for many, many years, and one that I'm looking forward to reading for that period. So, yeah, equating it to a TV show would be good. I'm trying to think what would be a good comparison, though, and I'm having a hard time finding one. It's kind of a unique story in that respect.
Yeah, and, you know, the 4400, I just looked at it from a standpoint, it's nothing at all like the 4400 other than maybe just the style. It's got kind of semi-sci-fi elements, but it's got kind of normal type of people in, you know, with maybe a little something special about them built into it. And certainly while the 4400 tells the stories of many people, this is focusing mostly on Julie. But, you know, it was the closest I could come to thinking of something that was at all like this, because a lot of other shows, you know, it's not like a standard drama, because it has certainly the, you know, military experimentation and, you know, this suit and all this kind of things built into it. But then it's not like something that's normally like that, which goes much more action or much more sci-fi. It's kind of a nice blending of the two.
Yeah. Well, and I could see this eventually getting translated to a TV series, because it's got the characters and characterization that I think would work well there, in kind of the mystery suspense, not suspense story, but you know what I mean, that would play well. And again, it's like we were saying, different than a lot of what's on TV right now, and certainly different than a lot of comics that are out there. So add to that a very polished art and story, you know, from Terry Moore, and, you know, how can you go wrong on this? I will say, if you haven't gotten into it at this point and you're thinking about it, if you can, start at the beginning. When I read through this, I wasn't really thinking, gee, how accessible would this issue be if you haven't read the first three? I think you can kind of sort of pick up on what's going on, but, you know, we're only on issue four. You know, track down those first three and start from the beginning.
I would suspect that any well-stocked comic shop should have the first three issues available. I'm not sure if this has been selling out off the shelves or not.
I don't know.
It seems like you should be able to get it. Let me take a quick look on my comic shop. Excuse my typing sound effects here as I take a look here.
But any indie-friendly store is certainly going to be carrying this, I would think, and probably ought to have a couple issues left or be able to get you.
So my comic shop does not have the first issue in stock. They do have issues 2 and 3 and 4, obviously.
Well, and I would imagine Terry Moore's going to a lot of the conventions and stuff, and we'll have some copies there.
Yeah, and I suspect that, you know, we'll be getting a trade on this after the first 6 issues.
Yeah, probably 6. Definitely one worth taking a look at, certainly if you liked the art and story and stuff in Strangers in Paradise, and certainly even if you didn't. Again, I didn't find that kind of slice of life story really hooked me, whereas Echo definitely has. And I picked it up more on just the strength of Terry Moore's name and reputation.
Okay, and then we have one extra book this week, which is Station number 1 from Boom Studios. What do you think?
I liked it. I thought it was really good. And this is another one where I'll make kind of the TV comparison. But the reason I want to make that is because this is the kind of story that I at least don't see all that often in comics. I'm sure there are plenty out there like it. But again, a lot of what I read is more the standard superheroic stuff, because let's face it, that's a lot of what's being published. This is a murder mystery in space and contemporary day space. And I found that really interesting. And it's very easy for me to fall into the trap of, particularly when reading some of the Boom stuff, feeling like I'm reading something that should be a sci-fi channel movie. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because this is stuff that kind of fits my expectations of what those would be more than it fits my expectations of the kinds of comics I tend to read. I found this was a good setup for the murder mystery aspect. It was interesting characters, good background stuff. It was one I was kind of curious about, you know, can they pull this off, whatever. I was expecting kind of a bit more of a cliche aspect to it than I got. I found this was a lot more developed story, and I'm really enjoying a lot of what Boom's coming out with, and it shows that they've got people who know how to put together stories. I think a lot of them, though, do have a background of doing shows like Eureka and others for sci-fi. Hence kind of that, you know, knee-jerk comparison. But I thought this was really good. I'm looking forward to the other issues.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this first issue. It's set on the International Space Station, which is a real place. You know, I always like that one. It's not something totally made up. We do have the murder mystery sort of thing. And, you know, you're on a space station. There's only so many people. And it's like, okay, who done it? Let's figure that out. The art, I really liked that two-page spread, and there was so little art on it, but it so effectively conveyed what they were trying to go for.
Yeah, I thought that was really well done, as was the page leading up to it.
Yeah. So we've got, what, about five or six characters here on this space station, and we'll find out what goes on. I'm looking forward to it. I'm crossing my fingers that we finish this up nicely and on time, and this will be one that if you don't collect it in monthly form, I'm sure, you know, it's a guarantee that this will be in a trade paperback, and I think it'll read really nicely in a trade paperback form when it comes out that way too.
Yeah. I mean, do you agree with me that it does feel kind of like a sci-fi channel movie?
Yeah. Yeah, I could see, you know, I could see this being on the screen.
And again, I don't mean that in any kind of a negative way. To me, it's kind of a good thing because it feels like something that would be worth putting the money behind to film. So certainly I'm glad they did it as a comic and whatnot. So Boom's doing some interesting stuff. I've enjoyed this Foundation. Certainly love Megas.
Megas was Virgin.
Oh, Virgin. For some reason, I keep thinking that's Boom, but you're right. That's Virgin.
You're thinking Northwind was.
That's what
Boom.
I'm thinking. Yeah, that was good too. So they've done some good stuff. I certainly think that Mark Waid as editor in chief there is good for their studio, and I'm really interested to see where they go going forward because they're doing stuff that is different than what a lot of other comics companies are doing. I mean, again, murder mystery in space, nice simple concept, but we're not really seeing that elsewhere.
The one thing I will say about Boom Studios is that they put out books that will appeal to almost anybody. It's not something that is exclusively the realm of people who read comics. I think they're very accessible in the stories that they tell to the general public. And if you want to give somebody a comic book to kind of get them into comics, you know, if you got someone who likes murder mysteries, you can give them Station. If you got somebody who likes kind of intrigue, suspense, kind of a spy thing, you can hand them Foundation. If you have someone who likes a kind of sci-fi, Mad Max kind of thing, you can hand them Northwind. You know, they've got the High Roller series coming out that's got, you know, some crime and gambling aspects to it. I mean, you can find books from these guys, and then they certainly have the horror genre. They've got the Cthulhu stuff. They've got Scream Queen. They've got other kind of traditional horror type of books for people who like those kind of books. Those tend to cross over a little bit more into comics, but, you know, this side of their line where they're putting out these standard, just good fiction kind of stories told in a graphic format, I think are very accessible to people who are not traditional comic book readers. And I think they're to be applauded for that.
Totally, totally. If you've got somebody who loves watching various types of TV shows, Boom probably has a property of that, you know, nature somewhere in their lineup, either that's come out or will be coming out soon. You know, Potter's Field is another one. Anyone who likes the lone investigator type, you know, TV shows or whatever would probably enjoy that. It's very much a TV studio mentality in comic format, and I mean that in the best of ways. Because, again, they're trying to do stuff that's much more accessible. They're not trying to stick to the comfortable genres that are kind of time-tested in comics, which, let's face it, is predominantly superhero stuff. And they're really kind of pushing the boundaries of what can and should be done in comics.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely to be applauded for that.
Okay. I think that's it for this week. Next week's episode, you're going to be recording at my place.
Yes,
sir. As you're out in California for Comic-Con. I think we'll be doing two episodes in a row.
The first
we'll try to get them up on the same schedule, though.
Yeah, we'll try to get next week's out on Monday. It is conceivable it may be a later Monday release or possibly Tuesday one, depending on timing. But we'll try to get it up on time. And then, like you said, we're going to be recording the following week kind of at the same time. So that one should definitely get up in time for that following Monday. Because we'll be out there for San Diego. If you're going to San Diego, by all means, let us know. We'll try to find a time to meet you on the convention floor and say hi.
Yep, definitely you can shoot us an email. That's the best way, really, to theguys@comicbookpage.com. I'll have my BlackBerry, so I should be able to see emails while I'm there, depending on what kind of signal I'm getting inside the convention floor.
I'll have my Palm Life Drive, so if I can get a Wi-Fi connection in the convention center, which I may or may not, I'll be able to check email periodically. But certainly let us know ahead of time, and we'd like to meet people face-to-face. That's always fun.
Yeah, and check out the group. If you're not a member of the Comic Book Page group on Facebook, we still need to talk about it, but I think we'll try to have some kind of a meetup on Thursday night someplace for dinner. And anyone who's out there who would like to join us, I'll send out an invite to people who are on the Facebook group who have responded that they will be attending the San Diego Comic-Con event that I created as part of the Comic Book Page group.
Cool. Sounds good.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Join us next week when we discuss Batman Confidential number 19 from DC, Secret Invasion number 4 from Marvel, and I Kill Giants number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.